The meeting to order. We've got some things we can do, I believe. Go ahead and call the meeting to order at 8:35 a.m. on September 11th. For roll call, we're all present. Board members, Patrick Campbell, and the informant, Mr. Rose, a public member, head of the director, and the move on to the review of our minutes from the August 14th meeting. I didn't have any issues with any of the meetings before.
I did not.
I did not either.
So I will make a motion to accept the general session minutes of 8:14:19. As written.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Or opposed. Okay, so executive session minutes from 8:14:2019. Again, I didn't see any issues with this. Did anyone else?
No.
Yep.
So I think the motion to accept our executive session minutes.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay, then we can move on to issuances of licenses, which is under 5D. And there we have Dr. Azad, and is it Dr. Salih? The first, Dr. Azad, she'd had a name change that she indicated, and she is applying via comedy. Everything was all complete, right? And then the next doctor is applying for a regular license. Looks like everything here was in line for his license. Anybody have any problems with any of that?
No.
So I will need to issue licenses to Dr. Azad and Sal with that they paid their required fee within 12 months of this approval date.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. And we can move on to the initial, or we have applications here for registrations to dispense drugs and devices from Dr. Montes, Dr. Pett, and Dr. Simonson. And they've all paid their fees. The applications were complete, correct, Heather? So I will make a motion to accept the applications for initial registration to dispense drugs and devices for Drs. Montes,
second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Okay, then we can move down to G. We have renewal application for Jennifer Papalardo. And it looks like she's requesting a waiver of her CME due to health reasons. She gave doctor's letter said she couldn't travel and they were asking for an extension to January of 2020.
She just here?
Pardon me?
Wasn't she just here in front of the board? She was. Yeah.
Was she, what it was, was that about this issue?
No. This is about a complaint.
Okay.
What do our statutes say about granting?
You know, the usual for CME, there's military service, travel outside the country, you're outside the country, and I think we've had one other doctor in the past that asked for an extension because of an illness and inability to travel. That wasn't too long ago.
Yeah. Is she still working?
No, I don't believe that was, you know, that's mentioned in
here. Right. So,
right, and you can do online. Exactly. Go to see Dr. Dancho or Dr. Kukie's
right.
coursework. And that's when they asked for the, you know.
Which may or may not sync with her work schedule, but.
Maybe that's something we should ask her. Is, was she still working during that time that she?
Or does she have any online CMEs?
Heather, did she have any CMEs at all, or had she complete e-licensing?
Yeah, I think it. We may want to ask for a more detailed explanation. Why she thinks she needs a 6-month extension.
And she,
I don't want to get too personal about medical issues, but can she go to local CME? Is she working? Can she do online? We may want to find that out and at least get her response to it.
Because if she did, she is, when did she make this her reapplication? I mean, if she had known for a while that she wasn't doing things, why did it
right.
take her till now to ask?
August 20th.
Oh. And how many years has this doctor been licensed?
June 28th, 2012.
He's had a license for a while. Well, I agree with Dr. Leonetti. I think we need to ask the doctor some more questions.
So, on a legal side, how does this work with her license?
So, there is an overarching statute that states that if a renewal was submitted timely, and hers was still submitted timely, she just had to pay that. And if it's pending before the board, for the board to make a determination, the license does not expire.
Okay.
So her license won't expire. Her expiration date will not be updated.
Okay.
She is still legally able to practice.
All right.
And I just got some messages from Frankie.
Okay.
She says, start without me. I'm on my way.
Okay. So, yeah, I would make a recommendation to send a letter to Dr. Pappalardo and ask for a more detailed explanation as to why she is requesting a 6-month deferment on obtaining her CMEs. Does she have any online? Does she have access to the local CME programs that are available in Tucson? So you don't always have to travel just to get your CMEs. But if she has a good explanation, then I would be in favor of granting her that.
Next year, they can just do online, so that
yeah,
right. Exactly. So, then other people. All right, let's see.
Chad.
Yeah, Chad Westfall is our next, and that's on the supplement.
It is included in the flash drive if you have a flash drive.
He had a malpractice case. He has taken his opioid course. His application is complete. And apparently, this is just a brand new malpractice case, and he doesn't have much information to present. to us at this time.
Oh.
And it was a.
So he's going to have to give us more information when it's available.
So we can accept his renewal and then end on again. Once we have more information, we can open it.
Well,
can we go ahead and do that
now? I don't even know if I would open a complaint because we don't know.
No, what? Yes, exactly.
The basis. So I would okay his renewal. And then request that he keep the board updated when he gets more detailed information regarding the malpractice suit. When that happens, then the board can review it, and if they find there's evidence or... We just don't want to let that slide because he may not ever respond to us, so we got to make sure we stay on top of it. I would make a motion to accept Chad Westfall's application for relicensure.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So. Okay, so we can go on to, do you think we're okay to do the temporary licensure? Do you think we're going to need Frankie on that, Heather?
I don't think so. The
H.
So it has become effective as of August 27th that boards are required to now offer temporary licensure. So with Frankie's input, I created an application. And according to the statute, the application has to be approved within 30 days. So in order to do that, Frankie's recommendation to me was to put this on the agenda for the board to approve the application that was drafted and to give me the authority to approve the applications. But Frankie's here if you guys have questions.
Does it say how long this temporary is in effect? Is there a time limit on it?
30 days.
30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be approved within 30 days of receipt.
It's good for 30 days once it's approved. Okay. So what if the doctor sent an application and said, I want to have a temp, I'm going to be in Phoenix in March of 2020. They're applying right now. And I know I'm going to be here. I'm not.
I would tell them not to apply.
Don't apply.
Until they're ready. You know, maybe if they're coming in March of 2020, maybe have them submit their application in February. Because I technically would have to approve that application within 30 days of receipt.
You would approve it, not us.
Correct.
Oh. Okay. So then you don't have to wait for a board meeting. That's what I was trying to get to. So, okay. So do it as close to the time that you're going to be needed in as possible. Okay. So technically, if they got it, you received it this week, you could approve it, and they would be okay for next week. Oh, that's good.
As long as I had all the information,
yeah, yeah.
They meet the criteria, but
right.
There wasn't much criteria that needed to be met.
Okay.
And then the other issue, too, is whether or not the board wants to charge a fee.
Oh, there's always a fee.
Right, and Heather had explained to me that if we do that, then we
government.
Have to add that.
Yes.
Then that has to be added into the rule.
Potentially, and that may be a question for Frankie. If it's just considered an application, then it would be the $450 application. But
I would stay away from charging that much. Some of the other boards, back when you guys did the issuance and application fee. It was broken down into a smaller fee and a larger fee. So some boards still have those two separate statutes, so they're going under the application for like $150 and not charging the issuance fee. You guys don't have that anymore because we kind of consolidated that a couple of years ago. So I would suggest you do another rule. Yeah, and do an exemption request to establish a fee. But I guess the question is, what would you want to charge?
$100.
I like 100.
Well, as I said, I've seen around 150, somewhere between 1 and 200, so that seems like a reasonable request.
$9.
And if I were to get one.
We have a special. a Groupon.
So there will be no charge for the temporary prior to the passing of the rule.
Right. Okay.
So we need to make a motion to set that fee.
You would need to, if we had discussion and have discussed the fee, yes, we would need a motion to set the fee for that application. And then there would be, are we on that?
Yes.
So we would also need a separate motion to delegate the authority to approve temporary licenses to your executive director.
So the first motion I'll make is to our executive director the authority to review and approve the temporary license application.
Second it.
Discussion. Do you have to do a typical like background check on these people? Do you have to call the national database and those that type of thing?
There's still a background check and still verify their license. And education.
Their license in the state that they're licensed in has to be in good standing with no disciplinary action or no pending complaints.
So you will still run a background check. So if there's a hit on a background check, she cannot approve those under the delegation authority. Just like regular applications, that would still come before the board.
And it has to be notarized.
Mm-hmm. And it does have to be notarized. Unfortunately, they did stick a notary thing back under that provision. I know we just recently got rid of our notarization requirement, but for the temporaries, that is required by all agencies.
Okay. So then, we have to vote.
Yep.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. And then next, I would make a motion that our application fee for temporary licensure be $100.
Second.
Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Okay. Is there anything else we need to know about that temporary licensing that we didn't cover?
Not that I can think of.
Available on the website, right?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Because I needed the board to look at this draft. Yeah. And approve that. Yeah.
Will that license fee go into the board's or into the general fund?
It'll go into the board's. 90% of it will.
Until they sweep it.
Okay. So, and then there's no fee until we get set in rule.
Yes. There you go.
She went to be.
I don't know. They're
okay.
Right off my trips to New York.
All right. Since now we have everyone here in full, we'll go ahead then and go back with our investigating or items for board review, discussion, and possible action. We have our first is an update on the review for audit report for Dr. Patrick Farrell, and Dr. Cohn has been doing the audit, and he's on the phone, and we have Dr. Farrell present with his attorney, Ms. Gingrich.
Good morning.
Dr. Cohn, are you there?
I'm here.
You're here. Okay. We're going to go ahead and have you begin with your audit report, please.
Okay. So this is a continuation on the prior inspection report on Dr. Patrick Farrell, the 1826C. This was an audit review that the board asked for involving Dr. Farrell's surgical patients. essentially we were tasked with, I was tasked with not looking at surgical care that was provided, but the documentation. There's been problems with the documentation provided by Dr. Farrell within his records. When I concentrated and looked at these reports, I was looking at them from the standpoint of, are their records appropriate and are they adequate for decisions to be made, whether it's surgically or surgically. As far as the report itself went, I had the, I could ask for up to 10 patients and audit up to the 10 patients from the list that was provided. I did request 10 patients, but I elected after review of 7 to stop reviewing any further for the audit. And the reason I did that was included in my audit, which you have, the last several sentences, which are bracketed, are my findings essentially related to his documentation of each patient and their surgical procedures. I could review them with you, but I think each, what I did find was that on each one of the 7 patients we reviewed, there were issues. They ranged from not defining, not describing objective findings well, the subsequent infections developing from a possibly from a lack of, say, description. However, the results themselves, the patients may have been adequate or good. The problem and the concern to me with this report and this audit is that the patients themselves and in their medical documentation is weak. So from a physician standpoint, my conclusion is that out of the 10 patients I looked at, 7 of them all had issues, and because there's an issue with the 7 in terms of the medical records themselves and the lack of documentation that Dr. Farrell continues to provide, that the case needs to continue to be substantiated from the standpoint of his record keeping and documentation. Thank you.
Thanks.
Are these with the new medical records? EMR that Dr. Farrell is using, because I know didn't we switch to a scribe memory serves?
I'm not sure if this is a scribe. These seem to be his records, and they seem consistent with other records of his I've seen in the past.
I
did see the same.
I used it. I'm switching over to Dragon Dictate Medical now.
What were these done with? Do you remember?
Scribe. I would. You know, I had my office help doing it, and they weren't efficient.
They were there in the room with you doing the.
No, I'd write it down in kind of like shorthand that they understood, and then they would input.
But you're not doing that anymore.
I'm switching over. I got my IT guy getting the computers all reset.
So once that system gets going, you'll be entering the information into a
directly.
Computer yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
Since we moved into questions with Dr. Farrell, do you have any comments, Ms. Greenberg?
Very briefly. Good morning, board staff. Dr. Farrell is here and available for questions if you have any. As Dr. Cohen mentioned, one of the issues going into this chart review was to look at the standard of care for post-operative patients. He said that he elected not to do that, but it's important to know that the records did show that the patients had good outcomes in the 7 charts that he did review. Dr. Farrell does understand the concerns regarding documentation. This chart review allowed an objective view and an opportunity for Dr. Farrell to evaluate. As a person, it's really hard to self-reflect, and getting this third party who can really show where deficiencies are is helpful. I know that, you know, the board does not necessarily want to see poor documentation, but getting that information to Dr. Farrell so now he can do a proper analysis and understand where documentation is lacking is significant and helpful from him, for him, from this June investigative report moving forward, as evidenced by Dr. Farrell's willingness to push forward and to try something new. You know, he tried a scribe that did not work. He's pushing forward with dragons. He's doing the dictation himself. Dr. Farrell will request that the board go ahead and dismiss this complaint.
I still have concerns about the documentation, and I know you've making changes and everything, but you have a population of patients that are sick people. And I think you really have to be so concise in your documentation to support what you've done for them and to protect yourself.
I agree.
I mean, one of your cases, I read that the one poor gentleman that with all the multiple amputations, I said, you know, you really have to have good records.
Is Dr. Cohen still available?
I'm here. I'm here.
Jerry, did you find...
I am here.
Did you find that the coding decisions were correct? Did you look at that?
No, I was provided no coding. Okay. And I didn't ask for it. It's like... Okay. If I could just, I don't really want to interject, but when Prieta Estate, I didn't make the decision myself not to look at these records from the standpoint of coding or from a standpoint of the actual medical care. That was the description from the board because the issues involved Dr. Farrell's documentation. So I didn't make any separate decision myself not to review these cases from the standpoint of medical care. Because the medical care in here is weak because of the documentation being weak.
Because in his consent agreement, that's how it's read out in the consent.
It was a documentation issue. It wasn't a coding or a treatment issue. So we pulled his record, or we were doing the basically an interim audit as a continuation of the investigation to review whether or not his documentation was accurate and complete.
You know, my feeling is that coding is part of documentation. It's part of the record. And if the coding is inaccurate, then your documentation is inaccurate. So, but that's, you know, Dr. Cohen is the investigator. He's able to do it however he thinks is fit. So that's fine with me. But my question to Dr. Farrell is, did you read Dr. Cohen's report?
Yes.
Do you agree with it?
I agree. I fell short on some documentation. I code everything myself. I don't rely on anybody else, and I code accurately for what I do. I've been going through a lot of self-reflection because of my depression and stuff. I've lost 5 family members and my wife, and it just got piled on top of me. I decided to go with this Dragon Dictate with templates, medical grade, see if this will work.
So my feeling is that I agree with Barbara. There's still some area for improvement with the documentation. I think, you know, the most important thing is you realize that there's an issue and you're making changes to try and solve those issues. And there's a lot going on in your life. I understand that. Dragon takes some time to get the swing of it. But I would say I would like to see some records once that program's up and going before we dismiss this.
Yeah. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I'm looking back here on two. We had only 3 CMEs for documentation that we did before. And I'm kind of wondering if you all feel the same way, that maybe we need some more, maybe some one-on-one or something to really help Dr. Farrell go through this documentation. Just for kind of an ancillary.
I don't know if we can adjust. Can we modify the consent agreement at this point?
Not at this point.
I think it would have to be voluntary by doctor.
Yeah. Recommend that the doctor.
You had me take an extra 25 hours of CME.
Yeah, I would think what's going to be important for you, if you're going to stick with the Dragon program, is that you
hook up with someone else that uses that program, because there's a lot of little tidbits you can pick up to make that system really accurate. Those systems can be terrible. I mean, just basically little information or the same information for every patient over and over again.
Right.
Or they can be very specific, and it's all a matter of how you learn to do it. If you're working with someone who uses that program.
As some IT people that can help me.
Oh, good.
So, I don't think the board's going to order you to do that, but I think that would be in your best interest to do that, so that when we review some of your newer records, once you start that program, we can see the difference, and I think that's all the board's looking for.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Because that's voice recognition, too, and most things take a while to get used to.
Thank you.
And you started using the
dragon? At the hospital, they're dragon dictate, but not in my office. My IT guy's still implanting it.
So the interim order is still in place. There is a request on the table to have this entire plan. It's not there yet. The order continues until it is satisfied. Therefore, giving them a period of time to submit charts with their
documentation.
I don't know what a reasonable
amount of time. When do you think you're going to start it?
Probably in 2 weeks.
I would think it would take a couple months for you to kind of get the hang of it. Believe
yeah.
Me. So.
They send about 3 months.
And yeah.
Allow for another additional 10 charts.
Yes.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Do you have an initial post-op note for yourself to circle when you're in the room before you dictate?
Pardon?
When you're in the room, because you're not going to be dictating usually in front of the patient, some recommendations would be to have a post-op sheet with the surgery and different observations that you found, so at least you can write it down. So that.
Right. And it's still part of what I've been doing. Writing it off into a sheet, and I could dictate right off the bat before I go on to the next patient.
Okay.
Dr. Farrell, does your computer talk to the computer at the hospital? Can they coordinate your notes from your hospital?
No. I have access in my office to the hospital's computer, but it doesn't communicate. I can type into my charting at the hospital from my office.
Oh, with the key fob or something? Is that how they do?
I just have access to it.
You could have an account or something?
Yeah, and stuff.
Go on to the hospital computer, and then you can enter your charts, and that's a nice system.
So I have no problem with my documentation in the hospital charting. I think they have more menus. And so I've purchased podiatry menus for different subjects and stuff. I know the problem with that is you start to get every posterior tib tendon dysfunction is going to be the same, and it's not all the same. You have a different grade tier, or you have,
right?
And so I don't like the fact that people go into, I look at other people's charting too, and they pull stuff into their chart that they didn't even do. And it's an over-documentation, but it's what everybody wants.
Right, and I think we can get off track here and talk about the whole EMR, but, if you look at enough charts, they're so repetitive because this stuff is just forwarded from the previous visit. It wasn't really done.
Very popular.
And we hear on the fact of having a large volume of material, but not a lot of really important substance. Material. Yeah. So try and hedge against that if you can. So that's. So do we have to vote to keep this going, or we just make a recommendation? No. He knows.
I think the interim order is still in place. So, Dr. Cohen, are you clear on the parameters of the extension?
I am. The only question I have is, if we didn't do it, can you add in there, just add coding, and on the next round that we do, I'll look at the coding in conjunction with his medical billing?
That is up to the board, if the board would like to.
Is it in his order right now? It's not in his order right now, then I'm not going to modify it. It is what it is.
Okay. So, yeah, it would just be the dragon dictation charts, 10 charts over the next 3 months.
That's fine. Okay. So, essentially, same report as just once he gets on, and I'm fine
with
that. Yeah,
exactly. Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Okay,
thank you. I'm still here. I've got a couple more.
Okay.
Perfect.
So, thank you.
All right, thank you
very much.
Safe travel.
Yeah.
You hot? Just... All right, so we can move on to... We have Dr. Farahani is present for case 19-31-C, and Dr. Cohn is the investigator on this complaint. So, Dr. Cohn?
Yep. Did you say Kamran Farahani?
Yes, I sure did.
Okay. Sorry, I just couldn't hear. My phone's supposed to know where I'm located. So, as far as the investigative report on Dr. Kamran Farahani, 19-31-C is the number. The allegation that's been alleged involved care provided by Dr. Farahani. The patient who's made an allegation is at an assisted living facility, and I believe they say it Adagio. And Dr. Farahani has been asked by the staff at the facility to provide foot care. The allegation essentially was that he presented to the room, didn't introduce himself, and when he performed the care was extremely painful for the patient, and she had asked him to stop, and he did not stop. Complaint itself has been raised by the patient's daughter, who had not been present, but had talked with her daughter about the care that was provided the next day. As far as the written response from Dr. Farahani, He does state that a visit was performed. It was at the request of the home manager, and it was performed foot care. Dr. Farahani states he was escorted to the room. He stated by one of the assistants, a David. It turns out it wasn't David. It was a different, who I've got documented later in the report. Dr. Farahani stated David stated, introduced him, stayed in the room for a short period, and left. Dr. Farahani himself uses 3-wee to try to soften the nails and make it more comfortable. He did state that there was no significant description of severe pain that required him to stop, and he believed that the patient may have been asleep because when they entered the room itself was very dark, and the door had been closed, and the assistant had to actually wake the patient to introduce. He also mentioned that the home manager herself had questioned one of the caregivers, and they had stated that the patient had mentioned that the care was a great job. From a medical record review, there's only one date of service. It was July 11, 2019. The record itself is well documented from a podiatric standpoint. It documented all the appropriate areas, such as vascular, which was diminished significantly, dermatology, in which nails were described as elongated, dystrophic with discoloration, and incurvated, as well as musculoskeletal, describing some weakness. And an assessment that was onychomycosis, as well as painful nails and PVD, and the treatment itself was foot care. The patient had been admitted to the caregiver to the assisted living facility because of multiple fractures from a fall. As far as the patient interview, I did contact her, and she did speak with me. She stated she was at that facility, as we stated, for recovery from multiple fractures themselves. Her daughter hadn't been present, but she had talked to the daughter on the phone that day prior. The patient herself stated that David was not in the room, but it was another caregiver named Darvin, which was confirmed when I had interviews with Darvin. As far as the license interview, I did talk with Dr. Farhini as well. He stated that he's worked with Claudia before, who was the manager. They've been working together for years. He did state David and Darvin were both caregivers within the facility. As far as his care himself, he states this was the first time there had ever been any type of complaint against him. And that actually was verified by talking with the office manager. He stated as well that the only time he remembered patient exhibiting any type of discomfort was on removal of the socks, and she did seem to be sensitive at that time. As far as other supporting information, I did contact several people at the facility. I contacted Claudia Ascenti, who was the office manager at the facility. She stated she worked with Dr. Farhani for at least 10 years. He stated there's never been any type of a complaint similar to this previously in which Dr. Farhani was involved in the care. She did state the patient had been upset after the care was performed. She felt that there might have been that the patient had been sleeping when they first entered the room and they startled her when she was awoken. She states that she described Dr. Farhani as a physician that's always very nice, talks with his patients during the care, and has noted had no other complaints before. I spoke with David, who was one of the caregivers at the facility, and he had been off that day, so there was no other questions to ask with him. I did speak with Darvin as well. He did state that he was at the facility that day. He did bring Dr. Farhani into this patient's room. He stated the patient was asleep. He did wake up the patient, and he did introduce Dr. Farhani to the patient as well. States Dr. Farhani as well did introduce himself to the patient. Darvin does not typically stay in the room because he had other responsibilities, so he did not witness the specific care, but he did not hear any type of specific incident that's been described here. As far as my conclusion, I felt this case is unsubstantiated. There certainly could have been discomfort the patient experienced, whether it was discomfort associated with the fractures and just the actual movement of the patient's foot and leg while they're in bed and care is being performed, or there's some stiffness, or there was some neuropathic symptoms, difficult to say. But when we take the witness, I think when you look at the people who've been involved in the care, especially Darvin and the office manager and their longstanding history with Dr. Farhini, there may have been discomfort, but I don't believe that there was a break in statute, so I would say this case itself is unsubstantiated. Even though a patient may have had some discomfort, it's hard to say how severe or exactly what it was. Thanks.
Dr. Farhani.
It's just, you guys are all, I've been around for a lot longer. I'm just asking for recommendation what you do in these circumstances where, I tend to provide care in a lot of assisted living facilities. This particular assisted living facility is very sentimental to me because my grandmother used to live in that facility. And so, I'm sure we come across these things a lot with geriatric population and, if you guys have any recommendations that could be done to prevent such things. I mean, I know that the daughter made the complaint, but she wasn't really present there. And it's very hard when somebody's recovering from multiple fractures who's also taking some narcotics and the sensitivity is grand. And by all means, I try to take it upon myself every time I see a patient to make sure I introduce myself, make sure I tell them what I do. I don't even say a lot of times podiatry. I say I'm a foot doctor because it's a lot easier for elderly patients to communicate that way. But I generally treat patients, and this is what I use, not because I'm sitting in front of you all. I always say this, that I treat every patient like my own family members because I have to be able to sleep at night knowing that I did the right thing for the patient and make sure that I don't deviate from what I truly believe it's important to me. So those are the only comments I have, unless you guys have any other
Well, one thing, too, I noticed that I appreciated it. My mother was just in a care facility, too. And I did a lot of those in my early years. One of the things that you showed your concern for this patient when you talked to the caregivers about her skin care. You wanted to prevent healed acute and that. So to me, that shows, you know, you're not there to, you're not there to traumatize the patient and things. And then the three-wee is great. I used to use topical lidocaine to help.
That's certainly something that I could, I appreciate your advice.
Bring a medical assistant with you so you have a witness on what happened.
I used to go.
And their perception, and they're just woke up, they're in a lot of pain. And, you know, even just taking their shoes, socks off when they have long toenails can hurt them. And that's nothing you did. So.
And, of course, I take everything that Dr. Leonetti recommends as well. So I like to, because, you know.
Do you remember this patient?
Yes, very well.
For this encounter?
I remember this encounter very well. I remember when I walked into the room. I made a mistake with the name because the caregiver was a new hire, both of them. And I remember that he actually took me to the room, and I even remember the color of socks that the patient was wearing. And the reason I remember this so well is because my day is usually planned out about a week prior, and the facility manager requested from the girls at the office that if it's possible, because the daughter had requested for me to see the mother, but I had no idea about the fracture. So that's why when I removed the socks, she was a little bit of discomfort. And that's when Darwin, the care assistant that was there, said that, oh, she's suffering from multiple fractures and she's recovering here. So that
where fractures were?
Hip and tibia, and she was she's had a shoulder humerus fracture so pretty much the entire right side was
she in pain when you were doing this?
No.
Was she crying?
No.
Where is this coming from?
I have no idea.
You saw the complaint?
Yes, I did. I don't know. I mean, and Dr. Leonetti, with all due respect, the crying was so grand and the discomfort was so much, I mean, this is a five-room facility. I mean, I'm sure there were Mrs. Ascenti's husband, who is the husband and wife managed this facility, and there was a caregiver there, and I had just finished two other patients. So if this screaming and this was so severe, I'm sure somebody would have walked in there and say, you know, what's going on? And the door was not closed. The door was open, and the distance from this room as you enter the house, it's the second room on the right, and it's literally about 100 yards away from the kitchen, which they were at. So I don't, honestly, I can't answer that question for you, sir.
And this was filed by the daughter, not by the patient.
As far as I could remember is that the daughter, because also the daughter left a terrible review on my health grades, saying that I'm only there to make sure that I cut the nails of these patients on a timely basis because I only care about the money, that's not true at all. $45 of is not worth me. And I also actually spoke to Dr. Cohen, and I said, I truly believe, and I know this may be too much, I truly believe that as physicians, no matter how, you know, how terrible a physician could be, but I really don't believe that for a minute any physician who took an oath to go there out of their way to hurt a patient on purpose. I don't know. I have some ethical issue with that, and and I know my grandmother is in the facility like that, and I've seen these things happen, so.
I agree with Dr. Foreman. Bring the assistance. Yeah.
So I'd like to put a motion forward, having seen no violation in 1931-C, I move to dismiss this complaint about Dr. Farhani.
Okay.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you.
I hope this is the last time I'm here for a very long time. This is getting, my wife was telling me, what, you going there again? I'm like, you guys have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we can move then to case 1923-C, which is Dr. Devin Bland, who it's a self-report on a DUI.
This was a self-report by Dr. Bland. So in discussion with Dr. Campbell, it was not assigned to an investigator at this point. It's before the board now to determine if they want to assign it to an investigator, investigate it further. You can ask to, you know, have Dr. Bland to keep the board apprised of the matter. He still is in the process, the court process, so there's not been a final determination made by the court. And it was a DUI in the slightest degree.
Verify there was no other previous, right?
Correct.
So just for some instruction for the board, cases like this are mandatory self-reports for any criminal charge. If the board feels like there will be information gathered from the completion of this trial that would be necessary for you to make a disposition, then you can wait and table this until it's resolved in the court system. But if you feel that, you know, this does not rise to a level that you need to discipline, or that there's no pattern of conduct, or that this does not affect patient care, you can go ahead and dismiss this today as a first offense. Your other option would be to assign it to an investigator, but I did not see anything in here that involved a patient issue.
And just to add to what Shin Eckbert stated, he did report within the mandatory. Mm-hmm. So he did report within the mandatory.
And it's just slightest degree was the only charge.
There was concern over domestic,
right,
domestic violence issue, and that's
kind of where I'm kind of wondering happens there. It was in the police report, how the incident came about. If you look on page 118. Yeah. And I believe that there's another court date set for September. I have been requesting that he keep me updated after each court date.
Jumped out of the car.
Mm-hmm. They had a fight.
And once again, you can also look at the domestic issue as whether or not you believe this would have a tie-in to his judgment or behavior as a practitioner, or if this was just a family issue that got out of hand, or if you'd like to wait until there's a finding by the court.
Yeah, I think that's probably the safest bet to table this until the court completes their process.
And just ask him to provide an update like every 3 months or 2 months, whatever the board would like.
Yeah, I would ask how often would the board like an update?
When's he going to court?
September 23rd is the next court hearing.
Would they have anything by October?
Yeah, you probably want an update after that court.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that you send a letter to him saying that he should update you in real time with anything from the court or his lawyer. If there's nothing in a month or so, maybe a monthly, just like that, you know, we'll check in a monthly or in real time. That way you can keep
Right. So that's tabled. So our next is 19-19-C, which is Dr. Keith Goss. And that also, Dr. Cohn, are you awake there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
You're here. Good deal.
Last one.
Alrighty, so case 19-19-C, Dr. Keith Goss. The complainant that brought this allegation, the complainant that brought the allegation is actually the patient's mother who brought it for her daughter. The patient had originally fractured an ankle on July 16, 2015. It was a left ankle. She was in Phoenix. They're the surrounding area at the time, but they're from Tuba City, and she subsequently had surgery the next day after the fracture up in Tuba City Hospital. Her concern is that she has, since 2015, had continued and recurring injuries associated with the ankle itself that was operated on, and she believes that that might have been done associated with some type of a surgical injury itself, and because of all the he sprains the ankle multiple times. The ankle itself now looks different. He states, the mom stated that the patient, the physicians in the room, was a Dr. Keith Goss, as well as a couple of residents and Dr. Tom Peters. As far as a written response concerning the allegations, Dr. Goss notes that that he was not even in the room. He did not perform the surgery. He's not the surgeon of record. The original surgical procedure itself was performed by Dr. Thomas Peters, who's an orthopedist, but had since retired. So Dr. Goss assumed the care as a covering physician for Dr. Peters. So Dr. Goss has seen this patient approximately four times and provided some care to the patient, but did not do the surgical procedure itself. He does feel that some of the issue may be associated with a possible syndrome of Ehlers-Danlos. He stated that Indian populations seem to have multiple conditions associated with ligamentous laxity, and it's very common within the Indian population, which is what he treats up within Tuba City. He did bring up an addendum within his response that we can mention. It doesn't directly pertain to this, but he's concerned that this case was brought by the patient because of Dr. Blanche, who is now up in Tuba City, has assumed the care for Dr. Goss's patients because Dr. Goss is no longer on staff at Tuba City Hospital, and that's associated with a whistleblower type of complaint that Dr. Goss himself is raised with the hospital itself. As far as the medical records, the records that we were provided by Tuba City are not ideal. We did receive the operative report. I can verify on the operative report that the surgical procedure was done July 16, 2015, and the procedure was done by Dr. Thomas Peters. It was not done by Dr. Goss. Dr. Goss is nowhere on that surgical operative report. There were two residents that were podiatric residents, but Dr. Goss himself is not there. As far as the notes we received, most of them are handwritten, and I really can't tell who signed these notes. But there was a note that was signed on July 15, 2015, the day before the surgery. That was done at Phoenix Pediatric Clinic here. And that's because the patient was playing basketball in Phoenix at some location and it fractured it, and they brought her to the hospital and then referred her back up to Tuba City, where Dr. Peters went and proceeded with the surgery himself. As far as the operative report, the report's dated July 2016. That we do have. That's clear. We do see Dr. Peters as the surgeon of record, and that there were two podiatric residents involved. The procedure was a percutaneous reduction with internal fixation of the left ankle for a Salter-Harris type 3 injury. There was a portable x-ray result, and it did appear to be, and it was fixated properly. There's a postoperative visit on July 22nd, 2015. Essentially, it's handwritten, and it did have the patient continue to remain non-weight-bearing. Signature was unreadable. Another one, July 29. Patient was to continue to remain non-weight-bearing with crutches and a Kim Walker. Was to proceed 2 weeks after for surgical for suture removal. Sorry. Again, non-readable signature. Post-op visit, August 5. Similar type. Pain was improving according to subjective findings. X-rays showed the fixation to be intact. Sutures themselves were removed, and patient was allowed to transition out of the Kim Walker within another 2 weeks. There was an August 12, 2015 visit. The reason I'm reviewing this is I believe these were the visits provided by the hospital indicating that Dr. Bland may have been involved in that care. The patient was to transition to a post-operative shoe. There was another on August 26, and patient was allowed to continue transitioning into a shoe at this point and an ankle brace. So these visits all appear to show adequate care and post-operative care and a normal post-operative recovery for continuous ankle fixation. There's another visit on August 15, 2016. This is the first one that is clear with Dr. Goss, and this was almost a year after. And the patients had been brought back to the clinic for review. An X-ray showed that the growth plates were in good alignment. The fixation was intact. The ankle fracture itself had healed well. The mom was questioning possible removal of fixation. And Dr. Goss had recommended it remain. The fixation remained for an additional almost year. As noted, these notes were provided as subpoenaed records, but I did receive some additional records that came in, I believe through the complainant's mother, from the patient's mom. And I did review those as well. One was from Phoenix Children's Hospital emergency room on July 4, 2015. It does note the fracture of the left ankle, and it was Salter Harris 3. We were provided x-rays. The review of the x-rays is included here as well. The care itself, there was a fracture. It does appear as if it was a Salter Harris 3. The surgical procedure itself was appropriate. The fixation was good. And the CTs for follow-up that the fracture itself is healed, but there did appear to be several smaller fractures that may have developed, a smaller avulsion fracture that could be consistent with the ankle injuries the patient's mom has been describing. That's pretty much it as far as most of these records go. And I do apologize, but they're just difficult for me to interpret because I don't know who's signing them. There was an additional CT performed on March 3rd, 2019. It's noted that Dr. Devin Bland had begun to take care, and there was another and he had a first visit on March 4, 19, and his last visit was March 25th, 2019. So I don't want to make any remarks as far as whether he said anything concerning Dr. Goss or not. As far as the complaint in the patient interview, I did talk with the patient's mom, and the mom herself was, when we were talking, had thought Dr. Goss was the surgeon, although it had actually been Dr. Peters, as we see in the report. He didn't know that was the case and really never brought it up until she stated she had some discussions in care with Dr. Bland. And she states Dr. Bland discussed the case, and it was after that that she started to become concerned with Dr. Goss as the surgeon himself. As far as the interview with Dr. Goss, I did talk with Dr. Goss. Dr. Goss had resigned from the hospital because he became a whistleblower, and it became difficult for him to continue to practice in that environment. I did verify there were no other issues that resulted in his resigning, and he states there have been no behavior issues, drug issues, clinical issues associated with the resignation. He wasn't trying to get away from anything other than the issue and the problem with the whistleblower effect. I did talk with him about his statements and his response with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome because I wasn't aware of any specific studies. And what he stated is that people up within the Navajo community that are practicing up there are aware of it. The problem is that the Indian Nation itself is not comfortable having genetic studies done. So he said there are no real good studies available to actually prove or see what type of how common Ehlers-Danlos sits within the community. But he says the physicians that practice in that community are aware of it as a possibility. There was no other supporting information. My conclusion is that this case concerning Dr. Goss is unsubstantiated. First off, Dr. Goss did not do the surgical procedure itself. So any concern the patient's mom with the poor surgical outcome, it would have to be Dr. Thomas Peters, not Dr. Goss. As far as the care that it appears Dr. Goss may have performed, I believe the care that he performed appeared to be appropriate and correct. And so I don't feel that Dr. Goss has done anything that may have led to issues. I do think that there's a possibility this could be an Ehlers-Danlos, or it could be that patient developed chronic ankle instability after the initial injury, and that's why she's developing other problems, and she may require some additional ankle procedures to stabilize that ankle, but that in itself doesn't involve Dr. Goss, and I just feel that, so I would recommend no unsubstantiation of the allegations against Dr. Goss at this time. Thank you.
Any questions?
I have none. I'm just sorry he had to spend his time investigating this useless complaint. This is ridiculous that it even got this far. So I would make a motion that there's no violation of state statutes and dismiss this case.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.
I would like to say thank you, guys. I'm done for today, and my phone is almost out of ink. That's out of charge. I'll see or speak with you next month, unless you need me to hang on the phone for anything specific.
Don't think so. Thank you.
No. Thank you, and have a good day.
You too.
All right. So we can move on to see the consent agreement for Dr. Wessel.
Yes, so you're going to find a consent agreement in your materials. Dr. Wessel has signed the voluntary surrender, although he did expire, I think, 2 weeks ago. It was in a suspended status because of the open status of the case. He will take the voluntary surrender. I have let Bruce Crawford know that he can reapply for a new license whenever he gets out. He's going to have to show the board how he's kept up his skills and whether or not he's been rehabilitated. Things like that, but the board will be able to investigate that application when it does come in, so if it does come in. I do understand that he has surrendered his DEA. I don't believe he'll ever be prescribing again, at least not in this state. But yes, it's a little, on the consent agreement, it really just refers to his convictions because I believe that everything else was captured in the two consent agreements he had agreed to sign in the past 3 years. So you would be able to review all three at a future point if he ever reapplies for licensure. So it just needs to be approved by the board and would need to be a roll call vote.
Okay. So I will make a motion to accept the consent agreement. Order in case number 17-07/B and 18-12-B for Dr. Lauren Scott Wessel.
Second.
Any other discussion? Roll call vote.
Aye.
Dr. Lauren. Aye.
Dr. Campbell. Aye. Mr. Rowe.
Aye.
Now, does that have to be a wet signature from me?
It doesn't.
The consent didn't.
It's fine. Okay. We can fix your signature.
Okay.
Okay.
And so, do we? Since he surrendered his license, and obviously we're not going to be getting any reports.
We won't be getting anything anymore, other than a new application should he ever want to reapply. It's considered disciplinary. It is a revocation, essentially.
Right. They, yeah, that's how
it will be reported to the database. So.
Okay, so then we've got our compliance updates. F, we have Dr. Brad Heyman.
Yes, definitely.
And we have Dr. Kent Peterson. So, Dr. Heyman, did he send you an email?
Yesterday afternoon, yes. Cool. I did receive one saying that he's not performed any osteotomies, but have one coming up, and if that is the case, he will keep the board apprised.
On to Dr. Peters.
So for Dr. Peters, I believe he's non-renewed. So I'm going to need two things from the board today. Unfortunately, when you have a probationer or someone on an order and their license lapses, there's usually a provision that requires them to renew that license. However, you can't force someone to renew a license. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what happens to that order? So what you can do today is you can vote to suspend the order due to non-renewal of the license until such time as he should apply for a new license. And then essentially administratively close the case because you no longer have jurisdiction over him.
Yeah.
So that's your pretty much your only option today. He has written that he does not intend to renew, that he will be stopping practice, and he has the time for the expired has now lapsed. So it would be a new application should he want a license back.
So when you vote to suspend the order, does that mean if he comes back and gets a license, then it gets reactivated?
Yes, sir.
So I would make a motion to suspend the order with Dr. Peterson.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
And that is for clarification until such time as he reapplies for a license.
Right. Thank you.
And then that would mean.
Renewal applications
for licensing and dispensing.
There were no issues with any of these people. And there's no one that we need to vote separately on or anything. And everybody's paid. Okay. So I will make a motion to renewal applications for licensure and dispensing registration for doctors Akamato, Al-Gaherbi, I don't know, Allen, Bates, Benjamin Swanger, Brigandi, Shirello, Clark, Cohn, Fairbanks, Farkas, Garcia, Gifford, Gillian, Jepson, Jones, Kleiss, Larson, Leach, Liu, Miller, Neuschwander, Olson, Pfeiffer, Quint, Schulman, Soon, and Wong.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. So now we have the members' reports.
So in the executive director's report, I'm still waiting on OSP to conduct their finalize. Analysis of the increase. I've provided them all of the information, and the last I heard from the OSP that Emily Jakovich and keep me. I have been putting it on my calendar, so if I don't hear from them within 3 to 4 weeks, then I. I'm still waiting to hear back from Asset regarding Windows 10. I've reached out to him twice and left a message and I've not gotten a response. So again, I'm putting this on my calendar for weekly check-ins. And then CE Broker. And this is a conversation that Dr. Erin Kimball and I have had. It's an email that she received. It's a platform that is free for the board to utilize. There is no charge for it. It is very helpful when a board conducts a continuing education audit, because this platform will actually send out the audit letters. It'll do a randomized list of licensees for you, so it does a lot of the work for you. This board doesn't conduct the random audits the way some boards do yearly or every 2 years. So in that respect, I don't know that it will be helpful for this board, but it could potentially benefit licensees. To use the platform, there's two different options a licensee has. One of them is free, and it's just their basic system where a licensee can upload and education. They can also see what some continuing education providers are offering, and a continuing education provider can also update whether or not that licensee has attended the credits that they've received. There's another platform, and this is how CE Broker does receive a fee, is if they wish to utilize the specialized or upgraded platform, there is a fee. And the only real difference that I can see with the two systems is that this the system that they have to pay a fee for, it actually has a breakdown of their continuing education transfer. So let's say you attended a continuing education conference and you got 1 hour of opioid-related CME, you know, and 2 hours in radiology and so forth. It'll track that information. And so it would be easy for a licensee to log in and say, okay, well, I've got my opioid requirement, I have my radiology requirement, now this is all I need for this state's licensure. And it does track it per state. There's one other board that I know of that currently uses the system, and I did speak with that executive director. So it's just before the board for informational purposes to see if the board would like me to look into it further, contact CE Broker, see what it would take to get it integrated. As far as I'm aware, it is compatible with Salesforce.
Do the individual physicians have to register for this?
No, it's not required. It would just be something that is offered if they want to participate. Not something that we can require that our license is present.
So if they don't, what good does it do us?
It's more beneficial for the licensee for this to track their information.
Yeah.
I don't. That would be a question. I look into it further. And whenever I was looking into this, even though it's not required that a licensee participate, CE Broker, if this board or any board offers this to its licensees, then I'm required to submit a weekly update of how many licensees and with their information. So that way, in the event that there is an audit, even if that licensee isn't participating, CE Broker can still send them the information for the audit. And then at that point, still, it wouldn't be required that the licensee upload it to CE Broker, but they could if they wanted to. So that's where, if we were on a schedule to conduct random audits, it would be good.
You know what the fee is for the physicians?
I understand.
Just, they're done paying fees. So, I mean, it doesn't cost the board anything. I mean, it's certainly worth looking into. Maybe it'll be more valuable as time goes on. I don't know. Interesting. And the physicians getting involved in this.
I can contact CE Broker because I've just done some online research and spoke with the other executive director, but I can contact them, ask how much the additional platform is for licensees and how long they store the information for, and then I can talk with worth putting on a future agenda.
Okay.
It
could also be something that we post.
All right.
To say, hey, here's this program. It's a great program from what I heard. A lot of other agencies don't require it, but I know a lot of other fields use it. Any questions? So the next item, the budget update, this has already been submitted, and you'll see that there was a request for an additional $17,500 appropriation because the boards that currently are on the Salesforce platform and system asset was raise all boards fees $17,500, and currently this board only spends about $3,500. So there's going to be a significant increase for this board. After I've already submitted the budget, asset came back and decided not to raise fees for FY 2021. So that is no longer going to be an issue. Otherwise, the budget is very straightforward. It's pretty much been the same for the last couple of years.
You're like a heartbeat away from the governor.
I know.
He goes down.
Yeah.
You know, to him, you're there.
I guess I better really take care of myself.
Yeah.
So, and this will go to the
2020.
Uh-huh.
I'm as tall as you.
Right.
So this will be approved at the next legislative session.
The complaint log, right?
Yes. There's been two new. Yeah, so
yeah. It's changed.
So one I received Friday afternoon, and one I received, it was Monday, I believe it was Monday. So those are not on the law.
So, now we have from this Friday, the legislative thing.
So, there's a confidential memo in there that I asked Heather to distribute. Pleasure. Not a whole bunch of crazy changes this year. If there are any questions about the advice provided in the memo, it is confidential, so either we can do executive session or you can contact me individually. Happy to speak to you. Other than that, I think it's pretty straightforward. We have the address of record bill. Basically, what the statutes used to say is if you provided only your home address as your address of record, that was public record. You may now opt out. Even if you don't provide a work address, you can opt out of your residential. However, if you do opt out, you will have to provide a phone number and an email address that can be publicly distributed. There is a provision in there for a carve-out if the board would like to consider this in the future as a legislative change. You may designate an association in the state to receive an unedited licensee list with all contact info, even for info for people that opted out. But that has to be done as a statutory change because I believe right now that was to directly just to the association unedited. Right now, if they were to request that list, we would have been out anyone who had opted out. You've got 1086, which is your temporary license we discussed earlier. 1108 is the electronic prescribing that's now going to convert everything to electronic prescription orders, which we knew was coming. And then 2118 is the unauthorized practice statute. gives the board now the ability to issue cease and desist for unauthorized practice and to do some limited investigation to verify the complaint. There's a mandate in here that requires the board to report any verified unauthorized practice complaints to the AG's office or to the county attorney's office for further investigation. And then there, you're going to be able to maintain a list of verified unauthorized practitioners on your website now for the public to see. So I don't think this profession has had too many unauthorized practitioners, but if that ever comes up, you have a little bit more bite in dealing with those. There is a communications notice on here that's not really for you to have to deal with. And then, once again, prior convictions. Board hasn't really had too much of an issue with that. But they're just adding a few more rights into the for anyone with a prior conviction. And just but that's nothing new. So if anyone has any questions, I am available. But it was pretty straightforward this year.
And just to add to that, I did make a change to the change of address form and to the issuance letters that go out to licensees or applicants prior to them becoming licensed, and giving them notice about the address. And then I have inserted the application sheet that was required.
Heather and I spoke about some of the boards were talking about changing it on the actual application, because currently it says if you do not provide a business address, your residential will be used as your address of record and may be released pursuant to a public records request. That language is still in there, but I think the consensus was that if we tried to go into Salesforce and change that, they may try to charge everyone again, and it could also be a big issue. So the issuance letters was probably the best way to let them know they could opt out. There was no mandate in the statute that required the board to put that on an application or anything.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a new Wi-Fi password.
Okay.
Yeah, if you needed to get onto the Wi-Fi with your laptops, that would be the password.
Oh,
oops.
While we're here.
While we're here.
Okay.
It doesn't connect, but.
Yeah, so you can just keep that. If you ever need it when you're in this building, that's the new one. It was just changed a few weeks ago. I figured this would be the best form to give it to you.
All right, so we have no call to the public, because we have no public. Any ideas or anything else you want on a future meeting agenda? Okay. Our next meeting is Wednesday, October the 9th, 2018 at 8:30, and Dr. Foreman, you won't be here.
I won't be here.
High holiday.
That's the most holy day in the
10:04, I will move to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.